My brother, you are naturally independent and self-sufficient. You estimate your ability to do more highly than it will bear. You pray for the Lord to humble you and to fit you for his work, and when he answers your prayer and puts you under the course of discipline necessary for the accomplishment of the object, you frequently give way to doubts and despondency and think you have reason for discouragement. When Brother W. has cautioned and held you back from engaging in church difficulties, you have frequently felt that he was restraining you. I was shown your labors in Iowa. There was a decided failure to gather with Christ. You distracted, confused, and scattered the poor sheep. You had a zeal, but it was not according to knowledge. Your labors were not in love, but in sternness and severity. You were exacting and overbearing. You did not strengthen the sick and bind up the lame. Your injudicious harshness pushed some out of the fold who can never be reached and brought back. Words fitly spoken are like apples of gold in pictures of silver. Words unfitly spoken are the reverse. Your influence will be like desolating hail. You have felt restless under restraint when Brother W. has cautioned, advised, and reproved you. You have thought that if you could be free and act yourself, you could do a great and good work. But your wife's influence has greatly injured your usefulness. You have not ruled well your own house. You have failed to command your household after you. You have thought that you understood how to manage your home matters, but how have you been deceived? You have too often followed the promptings of your own spirit, which has resulted in perplexities and discouragements, and these have clouded your discernment and weakened you spiritually, so that your labors have been marked with great imperfection. The labors of brethren R and S in blank were premature. These brethren had their past experience with its mistakes before them, which should have been sufficient to guard them from engaging in a work that they were not qualified to perform. There was enough that needed to be done. It was a hard place in which to raise up a church. Opposing influences surrounded them. Every move made should have been made with due caution and prayerful consideration. These two brethren had been warned and reproved repeatedly for moving injudiciously, and they should not have taken the responsibilities upon themselves that they did. Oh, how much better would it have been for the cause of God in blank had they been laboring in new fields. Satan's seat is in blank, as well as in other wicked cities, and he is a wily foe to contend with. There were disorderly elements among the Sabbath keepers in blank that were hindrances to the cause. But there is a proper time to speak and act, a golden opportunity which will show the best results of labor put forth. If things had been left to more fully develop before they were touched, there would have been a separation of the disorderly, unconsecrated ones, and there would not have been an opposition party. This should ever be saved, if possible. The church might better suffer much annoyance and exercise the more patience than to get in a hurry, drive matters, and provoke a combative spirit. Those who really loved the truth for the truth's sake should have pursued their course with the glory of God in view and let the light of truth shine out before all. They might expect that the elements of confusion and dissatisfaction among them would make trouble. Satan would not remain quiet and see a company raised up in blank to vindicate truth and to dispel sophistry and error. His ire would be kindled, and he would institute a war against those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus. But this should not have made the faithful believers impatient or discouraged. These things should have had an influence to make the true believer more guarded, watchful, and prayerful, more tender, pitiful, and loving to those who were making so great a mistake in regard to eternal things. As Christ has borne and continues to bear with our errors, our ingratitude, and our feeble love, so should we bear with those who test and try our patience. Shall the followers of the self-denying, self-sacrificing Jesus be so unlike their Lord? Christians should have hearts of kindness and forbearance.
Chapter 18. The Gospel Sower.
The parable of the Gospel Sower, which Christ presented before his hearers, contains a lesson that we should study. Those who preach present truth and scatter the good seed will realize the same results as the Gospel Sower. All classes will be affected more or less by the presentation of pointed and convincing truth. Some will be wayside hearers. They will be affected by the truth spoken, but they have not cultivated the moral powers. They have followed inclination rather than duty. And evil habits have hardened their hearts until they have become like the hard, beaten road. These may profess to believe the truth, but they will have no just sense of its sacred, elevated character. They do not separate from the friendship of the lovers of pleasure and corrupt society, but they place themselves where they are constantly tempted and may well be represented by the unfenced field. They invite the temptations of the enemy and finally lose the regard they seemed to have for the truth when the good seed was dropped into their hearts. Some are stony ground hearers. They readily receive anything new and exciting. The word of truth they receive with joy. They talk earnestly with ardor and zeal in reference to their faith and hope, and may even administer reproof to those of long experience for some apparent deficiency or for their lack of enthusiasm. But when they are tested and proved by the heat of trial and temptation, when the pruning knife of God is applied that they may bring forth fruit unto perfection, their zeal dies. Their voices are silent. No longer do they boast in the strength and power of truth. This class are controlled by feeling. They have not depth and stability of character. Principle does not reach down deep, underlying the springs of action. They have in word exalted the truth, but are not doers of it. The seed of truth has not been rooted down below the surface. The heart has not been renewed by the transforming influence of the Spirit of God. And when the truth calls for working men and women, when sacrifices have to be made for the truth's sake, they are somewhere else. And when trials and persecution come, they fall away because they have no depth of earth. The truth, plain, pointed, and close, is brought to bear upon the heart and reveals the deformity of character. Some will not bear this test, but frequently close their eyes to their imperfections, although their consciences tell them that the words spoken by the messengers of God, which bear so closely upon their Christian characters, are truth. Yet they will not listen to the voice. They are offended because of the word and yield the truth rather than submit to be sanctified through it. They flatter themselves that they may get to heaven an easier way. Still another class is represented in the parable. Men and women who listen to the word are convinced of the truth and accept it without seeing the sinfulness of their hearts. The love of the world holds a large place in their affections. In deal, they love to get the best of the bargain. They prevaricate, and by deception and fraud, gain means which will ever prove as a thorn to them, for it will overbalance their good purposes and intentions. The good seed sown in their hearts is choked. Frequently, they are so full of care and anxiety, fearing that they will not gain means or that they will lose what they have gained, that they make their temporal matters primary. They do not nourish the good seed. They do not attend meetings where their hearts can be strengthened by religious privileges. They fear that they will meet with some loss in temporal things. The deceitfulness of riches leads them to flatter themselves that it is duty to toil and gain all they can that they may help the cause of God. And yet the more they increase their earthly riches, the less are their hearts inclined to part with their treasure, until their hearts are fully turned from the truth they loved. The good seed is choked because overgrown with unnecessary worldly cares and needless anxiety, with love for the worldly pleasures and honors which riches gave.
Chapter 19. The Wheat and Tares.
In another parable which Jesus presented to his disciples, he likened the kingdom of heaven to a field wherein a man sowed good seed, but in which, while he was sleeping, the enemy sowed tares. The question was asked the householder, "Didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence, then, hath it tares?" He said unto them, "An enemy hath done this." The servants said unto him, "Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up?" But he said, "Nay, lest while ye gather up the tares, ye root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn." If faithfulness and vigilance had been preserved, if there had been no sleeping or negligence upon the part of any, the enemy would not have had so favorable an opportunity to sow tares among the wheat. Satan never sleeps. He is watching, and he improves every opportunity to set his agents to scatter error, which finds good soil in many unsanctified hearts. The sincere believers of truth are made sad, and their trials and sorrows greatly increased by the elements among them which annoy, dishearten, and discourage them in their efforts. But the Lord would teach his servants a lesson of great carefulness in all their moves. Let both grow together. Do not forcibly pull up the tares, lest in rooting them up the precious blades will become loosened. Both ministers and church members should be very cautious, lest they get a zeal not according to knowledge. There is danger of doing too much to cure difficulties in the church, which, if let alone, will frequently work their own cure. It is bad policy to take hold of matters in any church prematurely. We shall have to exercise the greatest care, patience, and self-control to bear these things and not go to work in our own spirit to set them in order. The work done in blank was premature and caused an untimely separation in that little church. If the servants of God could have felt the force of our Savior's lesson in the parable of the wheat and tares, they would not have undertaken the work they did. Before steps are taken which will give even those who are utterly unworthy the least occasion to complain of being separated from the church, the matter should always be made a subject of the most careful consideration and earnest prayer. Steps were taken in blank which created an opposition party. Some were wayside hearers, others were stony ground hearers, and still others were of that class who received the truth while the heart had a growth of thorns which choked the good seed. These would never have perfected Christian characters. But there were a few who might have been nourished and strengthened, and have become settled and established in the truth. But the positions taken by brethren R and S brought a premature crisis, and then there was a lack of wisdom and judgment in managing the faction. If persons are as deserving of being separated from the church as Satan was of being cast out of heaven, they will have sympathizers. There is always a class who are more influenced by individuals than they are by the Spirit of God and sound principles. And in their unconsecrated state, these are ever ready to take sides with the wrong and give their pity and sympathy to the very ones who least deserve it. These sympathizers have a powerful influence with others. Things are seen in a perverted light. Great harm is done, and many souls are ruined. Satan, in his rebellion, took a third part of the angels. They turned from the Father and from his Son, and united with the instigator of rebellion. With these facts before us, we should move with the greatest caution. What can we expect but trial and perplexity in our connection with men and women of peculiar minds? We must bear this and avoid the necessity of rooting up the tares, lest the wheat be rooted up also. In the world ye shall have tribulation, says Christ. But in me ye shall have peace. The trials to which Christians are subjected in sorrow, adversity, and reproach are the means appointed of God to separate the chaff from the wheat. Our pride, selfishness, evil passions, and love of worldly pleasure must all be overcome. Therefore, God sends us afflictions to test and prove us and show us that these evils exist in our characters. We must overcome through His strength and grace that we may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. For our light affliction, says Paul, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Afflictions, crosses, temptations, adversity, and our varied trials are God's workmen to refine us, sanctify us, and fit us for the heavenly garner. The harm done to the cause of truth by premature moves can never be fully repaired. The cause of God in blank has not advanced as it might, and will not stand in as favorable a light before the people as before this work was done. There are frequently persons among us whose influence seems to be but a cipher on the right side. Their lives seem to be useless. But let them become rebellious and combative, and they become zealous workmen for Satan. This work is more in accordance with the feelings of the natural heart. There is great need of self-examination and secret prayer. God has promised wisdom to those who ask Him. Missionary labor is frequently entered upon by those unprepared for the work. Outward zeal is cultivated while secret prayer is neglected. When this is the case, much harm is done, for these laborers seek to regulate the consciences of others by their own rule. Self-control is much needed. Hasty words stir up strife. Brother S. is in danger of indulging a spirit of sharp criticism. This does not become ministers of righteousness. Brother S., you have much to learn. You have been inclined to charge your failures and your discouragements to Brother W., but close investigation of your motives and of your course of action would reveal other causes which exist in yourself for these discouragements. Following the inclinations of your own natural heart brings you into bondage. The severe, torturing spirit in which you sometimes indulge cuts off your influence. My brother, you have a work to do for yourself which no other person can do for you. Each must give an account of himself to God. He has given us His law as a mirror into which we may look and discover the defects in our characters. We are not to look into this mirror for the purpose of seeing our neighbor's faults reflected, of watching to see if he comes up to the standard, but to see the defects in ourselves that we may remove them. Knowledge is not all that we need. We must follow the light. We are not left to choose for ourselves and to obey that which is agreeable to us and to disobey when it best suits our convenience. Obedience is better than sacrifice.
Chapter 20. To Wealthy Parents.
At the camp meeting in Vermont in 1870, I felt urged by the Spirit of God to bear a plain testimony relative to the duty of aged and wealthy parents in the disposition of their property. I had been shown that some men who are shrewd, prudent, and sharp in regard to the transaction of business generally, men who are distinguished for promptness and thoroughness, manifest a want of foresight and promptness in regard to a proper disposal of their property while they are living. They know not how soon their probation may close, yet they pass on from year to year with their business unsettled, and frequently their lives finally close without their having the use of their reason. Or they may die suddenly, without a moment's warning, and their property be disposed of in a manner that they would not have approved. These are guilty of negligence. They are unfaithful stewards. Christians who believe the present truth should manifest wisdom and foresight. They should not neglect the disposition of their means, expecting a favorable opportunity to adjust their business during a long illness. They should have their business in such a shape that, were they called at any hour to leave it, and should they have no voice in its arrangement, it might be settled as they would have had it were they alive. Many families have been dishonestly robbed of all their property and have been subjected to poverty because the work that might have been done well in an hour had been neglected. Those who make their wills should not spare pains or expense to obtain legal advice and to have them drawn up in a manner to stand the test. I saw that those who profess to believe the truth should show their faith by their works. They should, with the unrighteous mammon, make friends that they may finally be received into everlasting habitations. God has made men stewards of means. He has placed in their hands the money with which to carry forward the great work for the salvation of souls for whom Christ left his home, his riches, his glory, and became poor that he might, by his own humiliation and sacrifice, bring many sons and daughters of Adam to God. In his providence, the Lord has ordained that the work in his vineyard should be sustained by the means entrusted to the hands of his stewards. A neglect on their part to answer the calls of the cause of God in carrying forward his work shows them to be unfaithful and slothful servants. I had been shown some things in reference to the cause in Vermont, but more especially at Bordeauxville and vicinity. The following is from Testimony for the Church, number 20. Quote, "There is a work to be accomplished for many who live at Bordeauxville. I saw that the enemy was busily at work to carry his points. Men to whom God has entrusted talents of means have shifted upon their children the responsibility which heaven has appointed them of being stewards for God. Instead of rendering to God the things that are his, they claim that all they have is their own, as though by their own might and power and wisdom they had obtained their possessions. Some place their means beyond their control by putting it into the hands of their children. Their secret motive is to place themselves in a position where they will not feel responsible to give of their property to spread the truth. These love in word, but not in deed and in truth. They do not realize that it is the Lord's money they are handling, not their own. Parents should have great fear in entrusting children with the talents of means that God has placed in their hands, unless they have the surest evidence that their children have greater interest in, love for, and devotion to the cause of God than they themselves possess, and that these children will be more earnest and zealous in forwarding the work of God, and more benevolent in carrying forward the various enterprises connected with it which call for means. But many place their means in the hands of their children, thus throwing upon them the responsibility of their own stewardship, because Satan prompts them to do it. In so doing, they eventually place that means in the enemy's ranks. Satan works the matter to suit his own purpose and keeps from the cause of God the means which it needs, that it may be abundantly sustained. Many who have made a high profession of faith are deficient in good works. If they should show their faith by their works, they could exert a powerful influence on the side of truth. But they do not improve upon the talents of means lent them by God. Those who think to ease their consciences by willing their property to their children, or by withholding from God's cause and suffering it to pass into the hands of unbelieving, reckless children for them to squander or hoard up in worship, will have to render an account to God. They are unfaithful stewards of their Lord's money. They allow Satan to outgeneral them through these children, whose minds are under his control. Satan's purposes are accomplished in many ways, while the stewards of God seem stupefied and paralyzed. They do not realize their great responsibility and the reckoning which must shortly come." Unquote.